You can interact with the show by calling 760-888-5749 or use the hashtag PWPRadio on Twitter. Here are your hosts, Jay Leno and Will TLD Vafidez.
Damn, it feels good to be back. Pro Wrestling Powerhouse Radio, episode number 52, is live on the air right here from the one, the only, Jersey Shore. And I am Jersey Strong Jay, and tonight we have a very special episode. Bruce Hart will be joining us in just a couple of moments. Bruce Hart is a legendary wrestler, booker, promoter, trainer. He's done it all in the professional wrestling business, and he will be joining us in just a couple moments. But first, I just want to take a second and not talk about wrestling. I want to say that we had a big tragedy here at the Jersey Shore late last week. As you know, if you're a regular listener to the show, I live right by Seaside Heights, Seaside Park area, and our Seaside Park boardwalk completely burnt to the ground. Just very, very sad day for all the business owners out there. I made my way over there a couple times. I was actually there 3 days in a row, Friday, Saturday, and Thursday when the fire was happening. And it was just, it was very, very difficult to see. So all the business owners over there are strong as hell, and they will bounce back. And as always, we will be Jersey strong. That's what we do here at the Jersey Shore. But Pro Wrestling Powerhouse Radio is back. I'm back in the air. Last week, I was not here live. I was at a Blink-182 concert having a great time. But I'm back, and I'm ready to rock and roll. And that's just what we're going to do. We're going to put over the positive about pro wrestling, have ourselves a great time. Before we do that, you can follow me on Twitter, at PW Powerhouse, Facebook, facebook.com/Pro Wrestling Powerhouse. And please visit our website, which is the engine that makes this car go, ProWrestlingPowerhouse.com. Without further ado, I want to bring in our major interview tonight. As I said earlier, legendary wrestling promoter, a wrestler himself, some great matches, and I spent the better part of the last couple of days watching Bruce Hart matches, especially those classics with the Dynamite Kid. And he's a trainer, training wrestling, and he's opening up, once again, the Hart Brothers University training facility for the future of the pro wrestling business. Ladies and gentlemen, I bring to you the one, the only, Bruce Hart. Bruce, how you doing, man?
I'm doing really good, Jay. It's nice to hear from you. I appreciate the vine, as they say, and it's I've heard nothing but good about the show, and I'm happy to be on it and happy to be getting the message out to people down in that part of the world. That's a great wrestling base, and I'm really happy to have the opportunity.
Well, it's my honor and pleasure to have you on the show. I really appreciate you guys reaching out to me. And this, to me, is going to be a great interview. We're going to have a great time. But I've been hyping up a big announcement the past few days, and this is something I'm very, very excited about to be a part of. And we're talking the Hart Brothers University for professional wrestling training. And before we actually get to that announcement, tell us a little bit about the Hart Brothers University and what's going to take place at the school.
We're training some excellent young guys right now, and I've actually been doing that for years. You know, I trained a myriad of guys that you probably have heard of, people like Brian Pillman and Chris Benoit, the Bulldogs, and my brothers, and a whole bunch of others, you know, Japanese guys and British guys. And we're about as old school as it got, you know. And the last little while, you know, I've been sort of just observing what's going on in the WWE, and it seems like it's going back to, or they're trying to at least go back to old school roots with, you know, people like Daniel Bryan and CM Punk, and that's kind of right down our alley. That's, you know, most of those guys kind of came up in kind of little smoky arenas and all that kind of thing, and that's exactly what Stampede or the guys at Hart Brothers University came up that way. And that was one of the reasons why they were successful and dynamic and all like that, is they are, you know. And so that's sort of the impetus for us to be really endeavoring to kick it into a higher gear right now. You know, we've been training guys for a few years out here, but just in the last little while with our promotions director, Bob Johnson, and some of that, we've been kind of making inroads into the United States and via social media and all this type of thing. And that's part of our initiative right now. We're trying to establish kind of tie-ins with promotions and outfits in the United States, you know, in California and in the Eastern Seaboard and the South and the Midwest and all like this. And I think that's one of the things that the wrestling business is sorely lacking right now, is just the grassroots have been completely decimated in the last 20, 30 years by the juggernaut known as the WWE, you know. And I guess if you took minor league baseball away and you just had, you know, one or two teams or something, it would be the same parallel. So I think at this point, though, even the almighty WWE could benefit greatly from having access to a new generation of guys who have actually learned how to wrestle and know the know their way around the ring. And at this stage, I think there's a huge shortage of that, and that's, in fact, why they're having to recycle. You know, so many guys are bringing back Brock Lesnar a couple of years back, my brother Brett, or Shawn, or Undertaker for the 50th WrestleMania or whatever, you know. But there's not that many really guys who I consider old school that are coming in. And I think that was one of the main inspirations, or one of the main reasons why we've kind of been endeavoring to kind of spread the gospel, so to speak, and interact with promotions in the States. There's a myriad of all kinds of promotions, I guess, in the States, but all too many of them are trying to be second-rate copies of the WWE or Backyard or, you know, tables, ladders, chairs, and all this other type of thing. And there's actually a very pronounced method to the madness with old school, you know, where you're using wrestling as kind of the foundation for everything else, and there's everything has a perceptible reason, and it's a lot more purposeful and a lot more legitimate, if that word can be used these days, you know. So those are all some of the main reasons why we've been endeavoring to kind of expand and get our word out. And that's one reason I'm happy to be able to take advantage of that opportunity, even with talking to you today.
Well, that's something that I'm happy about too, because we've been talking about this big announcement all week, and I want to make that announcement right now, and that is that you are going to be giving a full ride scholarship, a cover 3-month course at the Hart Brothers training facility, and you're going to do that exclusively right here through ProWrestlingPowerhouse.com and Pro Wrestling Powerhouse Radio. And this is something that is going to be absolutely phenomenal. It's going to break the mold as far as this kind of thing is concerned. And what we're going to do is look for a variety of different candidates to be professional wrestlers, you know, male or female, big, small, tall, short, any nationality, bodybuilders, people from the MMA world, NCAA athletes, basketball, football, hockey players, whatever. If you're athletically inclined and you have the desire, you can enter into this sweepstakes and win a complete full ride scholarship to the Hart Brothers Wrestling Training Facility. And this is something that is going to be absolutely awesome. You can send your emails. If you're listening right now and you want to get involved, if you want to throw your name into the hat, please send an email to webmaster@prowrestlingpowerhouse.com. And upon receiving that email, we would like certain information from you. We want your name, obviously. Want some pictures. We'd like an athletic history. Maybe a couple of give us a couple of people that we can contact about you to make sure you're the real deal. Maybe some coaches or people, you know, references, your normal references. And we are going to run this promotion for, you know, approximately a month, maybe a little more, maybe a little less. We'll see how it goes. But I'm going to send the press release out, Bruce, right after we're done tonight on the radio to every single wrestling site that I know. I got a whole list of these sites. I'm going to send out a press release, and we're going to get the word out there about the Hart Brothers Wrestling Facility. This is going to be absolutely phenomenal, and I just want to thank you, Bruce, for allowing us to do this.
Well, I'm really happy, you know. And in fact, I was talking to our business manager, and we'd like to actually provide you with two scholarships, one for girls are one for guys, you know, so that would, I think, without digressing, but I think the girls of the Divas division, they need a huge influx of talent as well right now. You know, I don't like to denigrate the Divas and all like that, but, I think there's, a huge void right now in the, just actually talent. You know, I'd like to see a lot more, you know, athleticism and girls that actually look like they can put two or three holds together, you know, ring, you know.
That's great. That's absolutely awesome. So we're going to actually be issuing two scholarships, one female, one male, full ride to the Hart Brothers Wrestling Academy. But on that note with female wrestling, I just had this question in my mind. We discussed this a couple weeks ago on the show. And I feel like personally that the WWE, of course, they have an issue with their female wrestlers where whenever, you know, one of these female wrestlers starts gaining steam, they start getting pushed, they start getting extremely better in the ring because as I've noticed throughout the years, the more these girls are in the ring, the better they get. It's just that simple. It's just like anything else. Practice makes perfect. But I feel
I'd love to see them. I think they need a little bit of leadership. They need a few girls that actually can work and can you know, help bring along some of the new ones, you know, and all too often they do everything but wrestle, you know, they do all the prancing and they take 5 minutes to get down the runway and they kind of do the big kind of entrance and the pirouetting and the pouting and all the other stuff. And then the wrestling in most cases is, you know, completely incidental to everything else. And the match usually goes 2 minutes, and then they have some cockeyed, contrived finish, and then they spend another 10 minutes getting back, you know, and getting abused or their feathers ruffled or whatever. And,
there's a big niche. There's a big niche for that here in the States. There's a couple of all-female promotions that actually have a pretty big fan following. So there is that fan base for female wrestling.
Oh yeah, I'd love to see. I don't begrudge them the soap opera or whatever they feel like they need to, you know, weave into it. But at the very least, if the girls did a bit more wrestling, you know, it would kind of make everything else, you know, kind of enhanced. You know, I'm a big proponent of, in general, the run should set up the pass using a football analogy, the run being wrestling and the pass being the histrionics or the soap opera or the hot finishes or whatever else, you know. But if the wrestling isn't established and that's not your primary initiative, then everything else is kind of irrelevant or incidental, you know. And that all too often doesn't seem to be the case, you know. They need to... And it goes back to what I was saying before, you know, they don't actually have that many wrestlers from what I've seen that are capable of sustaining it. And that's precisely why I see guys like Daniel Bryan and CM Punk and Randy Orton holding court right now. They're among the few that actually can go out and sustain so-called old school, you know. All too many of the other guys, you know, or kind of lacking in that regard, you know, and I think people have almost kind of become tired of these one-trick ponies, of these guys who do everything but wrestle, and they maybe have, you know, the big muscular bodies, and they can cut these canned promos and all this other, but the wrestling itself is kind of lacking, you know, and I think people have almost started seeing through that, you know. And, but I'm hopeful that HBU can be, part of the equation and kind of restoring some credibility and legitimacy and whatever else to pro wrestling.
Absolutely. That's what it's all about. Sometimes it's just about getting back down to basics. But a couple things I wanted to ask you about.
Sure.
Let's just move on with the interview here. There's a lot of talk in pro wrestling about blood, the blading, whatever you want to call it, and trying not to really shatter kayfabe here too much. But
yeah,
it's been a time-honored type of deal where it goes all the way back, and I was just recently watching a match that you had with Dynamite Kid back in the day, and I can't remember what year it was. I believe it was 1979 or 1980 or something along those lines. And there was just an unbelievable amount of blood. But today, they've shied away from it. There's you know, all these diseases out there, and there are a couple of wrestlers who have had to retire because they've gotten some kind of hepatitis or something from the blood exchange in the ring. What is your feeling about...
I say most of them probably got it from, you know, drugs or illicit sex, but they... makes them sound more virtuous if they, you know, blame it on the wrestling business, you know. But
very, very valid point. But what's your take on blood in professional wrestling?
I think at the right time and place, it serves its purpose. And the biggest problem, I think, in the past was they had these so-called blade freaks, or they had these guys that did very little but, you know, get juice or color or whatever the terminology is, you know, the Abdullah the Butchers and the King Curtis types, the Sheik, you know, that were, becoming excessive in it and became a little bit kind of overkill, you know, and at no point should anyone ever perceive blood or whatever to be a kind of compensation for working, you know, and that was kind of the problem with some of these guys. They were just, you know, doing that all the time, and it didn't serve any great purpose. After a while, it was just kind of disgusting, you know, and turned off, parents and stuff like that. But I think at the right time and place, and if it's not overdone or whatever, it serves a purpose, you know. It's a good means of, sort of an exclamation point on storylines and this type of thing, you know. And I'd rather see color or juice or whatever the term is. I'd rather see that than a guy getting hit on the head with a sledgehammer or some of the other extreme type stuff, you know, and it's a little more plausible, you know, and I think at the right time and place, it elicits a reaction, you know, it gets your emotions going, it helps propagate sympathy or heat and those type of things, which are all, key components of the whole thing.
Yeah, it's very basic process to kind of get an angle over, and I feel like, yeah, if it's done the proper way, and, you know, especially nowadays, you know, go get a blood test done. You know what I mean? Go get a blood test done and then do it.
I hate,
you know, that's something that needs to be done.
I don't like to sound like I'm, you know, kind of trivializing HIV or Hep C or whatever, but quite honestly, I've never known of any wrestler legitimately that contracted HIV or Hep C or whatever, any of these other, you know, I, you might know of some, but I have never frankly heard. And I've seen, you know, a ton. I've seen more than my share of, you know, guys that were in bloody matches and all like that. You know, as I said before, you know, I think some of the guys out of ring activities are more conducive to contracting some of those things than they're in the ring schematics, you know. But if I'm wrong, I'd like somebody to fill me in on the details if there has been a spate of guys contracting HIV or whatever else from gaffing or whatever.
Yeah, you know. There was a guy around this area, I think it was in Maryland or something, and he knowingly had HIV, and he still wrestled and was cutting himself on purpose to try to get other wrestlers sick. So it was just a weird thing. He went to jail for life. He's going to be in prison the rest of his life because he got caught doing that. And it's just something that right now in the business is kind of a tough subject. And another tough subject that I really wanted to ask you about is concussions in wrestling. Now that's just it's an overall thing in professional sports as it is, concussions nowadays, and professional wrestling promotions and companies are kind of taking that step to avoid direct shots to the head. What are your take on concussions and that kind of direct shot to the head in professional wrestling?
I think any initiative that, you know, helps protect or make things a little safer for people's a good initiative. I think one of the best things they need to do is just cut back on the pseudo extremism. You know, I wrestled for many years, and I was a booker up here in orchestra. You know, we're doing some pretty seemingly hard fought, you know, Stampede was a fairly, you know, for want of a better term, hardcore territory, and we had very few concussions. I see concussions now being a byproduct more of the stupid extremism. You know, you're coming off the top of a cage, or you're going through a bunch of tables, like tables, ladders, chairs, or hitting them. Guys in the head with weapons and all this type of stuff. I think that's more likely a cause of concussions than just wrestling. You know, every now and then in the old days, accident might happen. A guy would take a bad bump or, you know, not duck and somebody would hit him, you know, something like that. You know, I've had a few concussions, but these days I see a lot of moves that are almost kind of an invitation to a concussion, or you're, you know, doing some of these, you know, high-risk high spots, you know, the ones where the marks are all going, holy shit, all that type of stuff, you know. And, to me, I think some of those things would be better, you know, be better to kind of cut back on the high spots and the pseudo extremism and the you know, they're all looking for that big pop, and I think there's more disregard for life and limb because of that, you know. Overall, I'd like to see a lot less high spots. For me, a high spot ceases to be a high spot if that's all there is high spots, if that makes any sense, you know. But all too often I see these matches that are nothing but one high spot, one dangerous, high-risk, you know, thing after another. And I see a lot on even these small cards, you know, where they get these so-called backyard guys and they're, you know, going off the top of the ropes and into the crowd and having somebody catch them, and they're throwing chairs and all this other stuff. And it's almost got to the point where it's not wrestling. It's some kind of perverse kind of quasi, you know, kind of extreme type thing, you know. But those things seem to be more, by far, more a cause for concussions than in the old days, you know. And we had a pretty hardcore style out here, but I don't think I ever saw Dynamite Kid, who was one of the best flyers of all time. I don't recall pushing, you know, and I remember guys like Pillman. Even later on, I heard about Benoit. So, you know, there was all this lecture about concussions being, you know, part of his demise. And I can't recall Benoit ever having a concussion up here, you know. I don't know whether he incurred them when he was doing the headbutts off the top or whatever, but I applaud guys like Chris Nowitzki and guys like that if they're vigilant and, you know, they feel like they're protecting. But overall, I'd like to just see a lot less extremism, not just to avoid concussions, but to restore some semblance of credibility, because just high spots and stuff is almost like a bastardization of whatever wrestling, old school or whatever, used to be. And if you did less of those, but at the right time, you know, it would get far better reaction, you know. And I think somebody needs to readdress just the whole MO of the business.
Yeah, it would mean a lot more if they just happened few and far between. One man you just brought up was Dynamite Kid, and I just the other night watched a match that you had with Dynamite Kid, and it was just a snug, really hard-hitting, like, war. It was a battle. It was 2 out of 3 falls, and there was blood, and there were you dropped him, like, directly on the back of his neck at one point. It was such a good match, and I believe the referee threw it out at the end, said these guys are out of control, and it was obviously building towards a rematch with more heat behind it. Now, I recently watched Dynamite Kid's documentary, A Matter of Pride, that Highspots.com did, and you were involved in that. So tell us a little bit about the Dynamite Kid. He's a very contrasting individual. A lot of people really don't know what to think about him. What?
Yeah, he's sort of an enigmatic figure, but I would say just from a working perspective, you know, in my estimation, possibly the best wrestler of all time, you know, right up there in the top 2 or 3 of all time. And everything he did, he had an uncanny, innate sense of timing. That was what made him, one of the things that made him so good. He was like a really phenomenal athlete, and everything he did it well, you know, and could fly, and he looked like kind of a vicious, relentless, like sort of like one of those old Jake LaMotta type, Raging Bull type boxers. But he really looked the part, and incredible sense of when to do things. But I think the main strength he had, though, was he was the fans won't pick up on it, but almost anyone he ever worked with, he made them look twice as good as they had any right to look, myself included, you know. And he took guys like me and Brett and his cousin Davey Boy and all kinds of other guys that weren't even, you know, up till that time perceived to be just run-of-the-mill workers, and they'd work with him, and everyone would be hailing them as, you know, the second coming of Dory Funk Jr. or something like that. So, but yeah, he, I think it was kind of sad. He put his body through a fair bit of wear and tear, I guess, just with the, some of the stuff he was doing. You know, he took a lot of pretty, every night he was taking, you know, bumps, whether it was in a small town or a big town, or, and I think he hurt himself more in Japan than he did over here. You know, some of the stuff they had him doing over there was pretty, with Tiger Mask and some of that. But just from a working perspective, he was a phenomenal wrestler. And I've often wondered why he and Davey Boy aren't in the Hall of Fame. You know, they're almost like conspicuous by their absence, you know, because, you know, not to be knocking some of the other people that are in there, but you know, they're head and shoulders over a lot of the people that are in there. And, you know, it's almost kind of like a travesty that they're not in there, you know.
Yeah, I sometimes wonder if WWE is just taking their time with these certain professional wrestlers and inducting them, not to kind of like put everybody out there at one time so they can continue to make money, not, you know, empty the gravy boat all in one shot.
Yeah, I've never heard their rationale yet, but I think anyone yourself, like yourself or whatever, that's, you know, been around the wrestling business, I'm sure I'm not the only guy who extols the virtues of Dynamite Kid or talks of him in, you know, awestruck terms, you know, because almost anyone I've known that knew him when he was working and was in his heyday would tell you he was exceptional or one of a kind, you know. So by that token, you know, he's almost like, him not being in the Hall of Fame is like excluding Michael Jordan from the Basketball Hall of Fame or Wayne Gretzky from the Hockey Hall of Fame type thing, you know.
Absolutely. He was a trendsetter. He was a guy who was, you know, way ahead of his time. And
oh, yeah, and
one thing,
that's one of the thing, you know, not to digress, but that was one of the things I was most proud of is from the guys that came out of Stampede, that almost every one of them was somewhat of a cutting edge original. At no point did they ever want to be a clone or a copy, like Pillman or Dynamite or Brett or Owen or Davey Boy or some of those guys. You know, they all were seeking to kind of raise the bar and, you know, chart a new course. You know, and that was one of the things I'm kind of most proud of with almost all of them. You know, very few of them were just trying to be the second coming of Hulk Hogan or the second coming of Buddy Rogers or Argentina Rock or whatever. They're all almost, they almost had that chip on their shoulders that they wanted to show the world that they were not a copy of whatever was the hot thing or whatever in the WWE or whatever at that time, you know. And that's one reason I think that they were all so good, you know. It's kind of no coincidence that so many, you know, awesome workers came out of Calgary.
Yeah, no question. I had a question from a fan on Twitter. Twitter handle is @WickedNemesis, and he wants to know your opinion on why amateur wrestlers have a difficulty making the transition to professional wrestling. He's not really including guys like Kurt Angle, Brock Lesnar, the guys that have been very successful. But why do the majority have some difficulty making the transition?
I think a big part of it is probably from their roots. There's almost this prevailing disdain, or, you know, that the average amateur wrestling coach or whatever is kind of sneering at that phony bullcrap and all like that. So that's to some degree ingrained. But the other part of amateur wrestling itself is almost kind of the antithesis of pro wrestling, in that pro wrestling, everything is hyperbolic, where you're overstating your expression and, you know, trying to get the crowd into it and, show your anger or show your, you know, if you're a heel, a coward or whatever. But in amateur wrestling, everything is about not, you know, keeping a poker face, not showing that you're tired or scared or angry, you know. It's almost kind of tough to break that mold. But, yeah, I'd like to – it's kind of a weird thing, as I think the odd amateur that's kind of been able to, you know, kind of put aside those things, I've seen some of them become pretty good wrestlers. You know, they should be able to you know, you'd think that they would have the inside track just because of their wrestling ability and their swagger or whatever, you know. But it has been a little bit puzzling. My dad used to have the same problem, because he was a big aficionado of amateur, and quite often he would get these guys who were, you know, kind of heralded amateur champions and all like that, and for for whatever reason, all too often he couldn't seem to light a fire under them, or they never could quite get it, or they could never kind of manifest the personality and the entertainment end of it as much as they should, you know, sort of like the Bob Backlund syndrome or whatever, you know, which they sort of made almost, you know, kind of satirized it in the 90s there, you know, but I think a big part of it is somebody imparting and explaining the dichotomy of it to them, you know, the working end of it and the athletic end of it. And that's one of the things that we had, one of the reasons why we had a lot of success up here is we, you know, went to a lot of lengths to kind of break it down and explain the method to the madness, or, you know, explain why you're doing what you're doing. And once you put it into perspective, it's a lot easier to learn it. You know, and too many guys are wasting their time on some of the superficial things, like the muscle head types who just want to go out there and pose, or they're just doing power moves, or they're, you know, doing everything but the working. But yeah, I think a big part of it too is these days is guys aren't having the opportunity to actually learn how to work. And I see so many guys going to WWE these days who probably, in a lot of cases, some of them have some pretty good potential, but they need a year or two of seasoning. It's like taking a guy who's maybe capable of hitting 60 home runs or something like that, but you still have to teach him how to hit the curveball and how to do all these other things. And that's why they spend a year or two in the minors, and they're ready for the show when they get there. I see it's almost like a common occurrence in WWE. You see these guys get the big push, like the Ezekiel, or the Great Khali, or a whole bunch of these guys, and then a while later they faded into oblivion, you know, and you never hear from them again. And a big part of it is because they don't really know how to work, and it's tough to be exposing all their shortcomings, you know, on Raw or SmackDown or whatever. You know, it'd be far better if they actually learned how to work and they got there and they could kind of do what they're supposedly capable of. But in most cases, they're one-trick ponies, and after the public's kind of formed this kind of negative perception, and in a lot of cases, you never see them reappear. You know, the Justin Gabriels and the Nexus guys, and these I've seen kind of a whole bunch of them that you see them come up and they don't seem to have a bad look and all this other, but they're, you know that they're kind of green and all like that, but all too often I never hear from them after their initial splash. They seem to just fade to I'm not sure if they're still in the business or what has transpired, you know. But
yeah, no, you're right. Perception is reality. And if these guys don't get off to a good start, if they can't be multi-dimensional, if they're just a one-trick pony, it's just not going to work in the long run.
When you get to the show, you got to be able to hit the home run, you know. And I see a lot of people, you know, they think that's all, you know, as long as they get to the show. But it's no great accomplishment to get to the show if you're batting 145 and leading the league in errors or whatever. You know, you got to be able to, kick some ass when you get there.
Yeah, if you get there and you can make a name for yourself, most likely you're staying. I'm going to bring in my co-host who called in tonight, and he's got a question for you about,
okay.
I believe it's about Survivor Series. And TLD, man, you're on the line with Bruce Hart.
Hey, hello. Hey, Bruce. Nice to finally talk to you. It's cool to talk to a Hart family member. I've been a Hart fan since '91. Brett was actually the reason I got into pro wrestling. So, and '93 is when I first got to see you at Survivor Series. So it's pretty cool to talk to you tonight.
Yeah, my pleasure. I'm happy to talk to some guys who are intelligent.
Well, one of the things I wanted to ask was, because that's when I first got introduced to the Hart family themselves, was with the whole storyline with you and Jerry Lawler and all that, which was really one of my favorite storylines growing up as a kid, just because there was a lot of personal animosity. And Jerry Lawler just stayed on an interview that, you know, that brings out a lot of, you know, people invested into this storyline. So I was curious on how that whole storyline kind of came about and how you guys got involved in the Hart match, which ended up being Shawn. But how did you get involved with that match, if you remember it?
It was kind of weird. It was just out of the blue. I got a call initially just before, quite honestly, it was like 2 days before SummerSlam in Detroit. And Pat Patterson, who was the booker in WWE at the time, called me up, and it's kind of weird. He says, are you coming down tomorrow for SummerSlam in Detroit? I think it was at the Auburn Hills or something like that, where the Pistons play. And I said, I had no plans on it. I haven't heard anything about it. And he said, oh, we got a ticket or something like that. And I said, quite honestly, Pat, the last few times I've flown down there and for these supposed gigs, it's been a waste of time, and I'm not all that. He almost seemed like I was kind of, he's almost a little bit surprised that I wasn't kind of marking out to be able to fly down and hang with the gang or whatever, you know. But anyway, to make a long story short, he said, oh, we got a really hot storyline in mind. I can't fill you in on all the details because we're still working on it, but you know, we'd like you to fly down. And so I finally said, well, you know, I'm not all that keen, but I'll come down, and hopefully it's not a waste of my time. And anyway, they had me planted in the audience, and they had some charade where Doink the Clown, Matt Bourne, was, I think, involved with Jerry Lawler. At the time, I think Brett was supposed to be having an intercontinental title match with Lawler, who was kind of about as hot as he had ever been at that time as a worker down there, as a sort of a heel or whatever. And then they had some lame pretext where Lawler had supposedly broken his leg and was on crutches, and Doink the Clown was going to replace him. And anyway, at some point, I guess the finish was supposed to entail something where Lawler hit the ring with his cast and his whatever, and the two of them started double-teaming Brett and beating the hell out of him. And I was supposed to hit the ring and, you know, kind of clean up, run them out of the ring or something like that. And it sounded pretty simple to me, so that's about what we did, you know. And it actually got a remarkable, you know, I was surprised at the pop it got. So anyway, Vince and Pat and everybody was ecstatic and said we got really some really hot storyline in mind. You know, we can't tell you exactly, you know. It's just almost amusing to me because most times, you know, as a booker myself, if you had something, you're usually kind of explaining all the, you know, and trying to fill everyone in so everyone sort of knew their role and all like this. But anyway, it was supposed to evolve into this so-called family feud thing at Survivor Series. And the family feud thing almost made me laugh because they had this guy who was the host of Family Feud, Ray Coombs or something down there, and at the time it was supposed to be Lawler and Doink and two other guys, and I wasn't sure how they construed that to be family or whatever, but in any case, they it was supposed to be them against the Hart family, and somewhere along the line, Doink got arrested or busted for drugs or something, and Lawler got, you know, incarcerated for something in Kentucky. So it ended up turning out to be Shawn Michaels, who was just coming back from being off for about a year, and I think Terry Funk was supposed to be part of it, and kind of a mishmash of guys that we had no issues with, Greg Valentine and Barry Horowitz, and some guy named Jeff Gaylord, who seems to have had a meteoric career or whatever. But anyway, to make a long story short, I was given to believe that the big storyline that they supposedly had in mind was going to involve me doing some kind of, falling out with Brett, and I guess that was supposed to lead to some kind of, some kind of an embittered rivalry or something like that. And anyway, I found that out after the fact, but at the time they ended up shooting the angle with Owen turning heel on Brett, and it's kind of they milked that for a while, and then I think later on Brett and I had a mini run, and later that summer with Brett and myself against Owen and Neidhart, and they called it the Heart Attack Tour or some such thing. But yeah, it was a little bit frustrating in retrospect, though, because it seemed like it had some potential, and I would have enjoyed the run. You know, I worked heel in a lot of other places other than Calgary, and I was actually probably my strong suit, and I had sort of a pretty good head for healing, which is why we had a lot of success up here just with the booking. You know, it was always, you know, fairly, heels were always pretty hot up here, the Schultzes and the Bad News and the Dynamites and those, you know, but yeah, that was sort of the, hopefully, long-winded, you know, kind of account of that, kind of episode.
Yeah, well, you know, it was still, to me, I thought, you know, even though it didn't go as further, I mean, Owen Hart obviously got the big run in the end, but I still thought it was one of my most memorable matches, was just seeing that you, Keith, and Owen all together. It was kind of cool to see that. One thing that you mentioned, you were talking about blood and professional wrestling. I actually do independent wrestling more as a hobby, more so than trying to make a career out of it. But one of the things that occurred in my time, I actually have, because of using the same ring over and over and over and never cleaning it, I actually got a skin disorder in my body because of the blood, and not only that, but the sweat all over the ring, and that caused me to have now a permanent skin disorder now because of professional wrestling. So when you talk about the blood,
I've seen in the past different transfers of, like, I remember guys the odd time having boils and carbuncles and staph infection, that kind of thing, you know, and that was, kind of attributed either to dirty rings or just,
right,
you know, sweating or whatever, you know, touching each other in the course of a match, you know. So there's been a fair bit of, you know, that apparent type of thing, you know. I think, and I totally agree with you, because I've been at some of the, I remember in England especially, but some of the rings were, the canvases looked like they had been washed in 30 years. They were like black, you know, and they were originally supposed to be white and stuff like that, you know. But,
right.
But yeah, I think it's obligatory, or guys should, you know, promoters or whatever, they should be cognizant of, bacteria and that type of thing, you know, whether it's not just the HIV and some of the stuff that's kind of, you know, well documented, but staff, I remember a lot of times guys would get styes or, you know, boils and stuff like that just from, touching guys that already had that or getting, you know, that kind of thing. So it seemed to be, I remember back in the day, my dad told me guys, he used to get VD and syphilis and stuff like that.
Oh, geez.
Back in the 20s and 30s and some of that type of thing, but there was even a lot more paranoia about that type of stuff back then. But anyway, I'm sure we can digress into something less.
Well, one thing that I wanted to ask was, because I learned and trained to become a professional wrestler, one of the hardest aspects for me was more so just the basics of just doing simple things, like just taking a simple suplex or just learning how to do a correct arm drag without hurting the person. What would you say what would be the most important training technique in professional wrestling would be?
A couple of small things. I think you got to break it down into very simple basics, but for all intents and purposes, there's really only two primary types of bumps that you take, either a forward bump or a back bump. So a forward bump is anything where you're being projected forward, like a headmare, a slam, an arm drag, a headmare, a hip toss, most suplexes, and a back bump's anything where you're getting knocked back, like a tackle, a clothesline, a drop kick, any of that type of thing. And the main thing you want to do on it, either landing it, is have a one-point landing where you're spreading the impact outward, breaking your fall and not taking it on your vital organs and not allowing your head to concussively strike the mat when you're hitting. And it's actually a fairly simple basic technique, but that's one of the very first things we teach guys when we're teaching them, is just how to take those two bumps. And it should always be a one-point landing with none of your vulnerable body parts being impacted. And once you get those down, you kind of build around that. Until you get those down, I guess it's like, playing hockey or football, whatever, regardless of whether you like being tackled or checked or whatever, it goes without saying that you need to know how to absorb those. Otherwise, you'll never even get close to the football field. And it's sort of the same in wrestling, but it's not that daunting, though, or it shouldn't be that intimidating. Once you get those down, it's like that's why you see these guys taking what look like spectacular bumps. And funny enough, most ones that look pretty spectacular or devastating, those ones very rarely hurt. Usually the ones that look kind of, screwed up, or you get the marks screaming, you screwed up or whatever, those are usually the ones that result in a separated shoulder or a cracked rib or a blown out knee or whatever, So, but yeah, it's just a matter of learning how to go into the bumps. And the higher you go, usually the better, because you have more space to lay out your landing, sort of the same pretext as a guy coming off a diving board or a guy doing a vault in the Olympics. If you go high, you can usually do whatever you need to and stick your landing, but if you don't get the height, quite often you land in the so-called fetal position, which is an invitation to disc problems or cracked ribs or kidneys getting bruised or wherever else.
All right. Great response there. And Bruce, man, I got to ask you about this. Everybody was a fan of Owen Hart. We talked about him a little bit before. Your brother Owen was such a spectacular wrestler, but he was known as one of the greatest pranksters in the history of the business. We've all heard awesome stories about Owen Hart, and I'd like to get a great story about Owen from you, maybe a great rib story, some kind of practical joke that he pulled throughout the years.
He did so many, and some of them are off color, so I guess I have to kind of confine mine to the...
You know what? But, this is internet radio, my man. You can say whatever the hell you want.
I remember one time, it's a relatively minor one, but it struck me as funny just because it was classic Owen. But a few years back, they had, I think it was one of those WrestleManias or one of those big shows, and my dad was down there, and And they usually had all kinds of these old workers and stuff down there. And I remember there was they were at some hotel down in Los Angeles or whatever, and this old wrestler who had been just sort of a, he was a fairly mild-mannered, you know, journeyman, a guy named Reggie Parks, and he had broken in Calgary back in the 50s, and it had always been a fairly humble, mild-mannered guy or whatever. But anyway, my dad saw him in the lobby, you know, and I didn't think I had a chance to talk to him, but my dad just sort of made note of those Reggie Parks. And then when my dad got back to his hotel room, Owen, who was one of Owen's skills was he could impersonate almost anyone really good. And so Owen called up my dad's hotel room as Reggie Parks, and he's kind of hemming and hawing, and my dad is kind of wondering what he was wanting, and he's like, "Stu, this is Reggie Parks," and you know, originally my dad was like, "Oh, hi, Reg, nice to talk to you," and blah blah blah, and Reggie Parks, "Stu, there's something that's been bothering me for the last 30 years or something like that, and you know, when we were down in the dungeon, you know, you you took a cheap shot at me, or you did such, you know, you bullied me, or you," and my dad's going, what are you getting at, Reg?" And Owen's like, "Well, I want revenge, to just you and me and all this other, you know." And my dad is getting more and more wound up. And if you think you can take me, Reg, grab your best hold, you know, like that. And, a while later, my dad was in the lobby, you know, there kind of some reception, and Reggie Park comes up. My dad was ready to tear his head off, and he comes up and kind of humbly hoists to him. And my dad's like, "Hey, if you want to do it here, Reg, go for it. Go for your best holder," or whatever. Reggie had no idea what my dad was on about or anything, but it was kind of classic Owen type stuff. You know, he was always doing that. I remember another time when we were in Japan, there was a guy named Steve Blackman who was over there, and Owen called up about, I think checkout time was like 11 or something, but they usually weren't that rigid about it, and about quarter to 11, Owen called up, you know, in this kind of mock Japanese, "Mr. Blackman, you must be out at 11, you know, like that. And for the next 15 minutes, he called every 5 minutes, and finally 11, he said, "If you're not out in 1 minute, you will be thrown out." Blackman, I guess, went down and was about ready to tear the head off this poor Japanese guy who wasn't sure what he was talking about or whatever. But yeah, Owen was... he was kind of a master at all that kind of stuff. And it was good in its own way. It kind of kept everyone kind of broke the tension. But yeah, he was an awesome guy. On I've never heard anyone say anything bad about him. So that's probably the best indication of what he was all about.
And he loved the wrestling business, right? Owen loved it. I always hear these stories about how he didn't really like the wrestling business that much, but he always loved it.
Yeah, it bothered me when I heard some of the, you know, some of it from his widow or whatever, but no, there was no way he could have been as good as he was if he didn't love it. And I was the guy who broke him in up here, and he was, that was one of the reasons why he was so good. He loved it, and he enjoyed the every element of it, you know, the interacting with the fans and dancing with his opponent and everything, you know. In my estimation, and not to take anything away from Brett, but Owen was a better worker than Brett. He was more dynamic and had more athletic ability, and you know, I think that he was just on the verge of getting his long overdue push when, unfortunately, the accident happened, you know. And But yeah, and he's another guy I mentioned before. The Bulldogs should be in the Hall of Fame, but he should be in it as well. You know, I would think it would be a huge emotional kind of etched in time, one of those things that would be really memorable if he was to be inducted into the WWE Hall of Fame. You know, I'm hopeful that the WWE sees fit to consider that sometime.
Absolutely, and there's a whole generation of wrestling fans that can learn from what Owen Hart. I mean, I grew up watching Owen and Bret and everybody, and there's a whole generation of fans that need to see more of what he did in the ring. And Hall of Fame induction, that'd be a step in the right direction.
Yeah, that's one of the things I really liked about the Stampede style was very rarely do they need all the props and all the artificial additives and stuff. It was mostly just wrestling and, if and when they did something spectacular, it was within the parameters of wrestling and it was, not a throwaway spot or whatever. That was one of the arts of really great working. That's something I'd see out of Bret or Owen or Dynamite or Davey or Benoit, guys like that. They seem to know how to make wrestling the main course and build to this compelling, cataclysmic climax or whatever, A lot of the guys coming in, I think, could learn a lot just watching old videos of guys like Owen and Bret and Dynamite and those guys. You know, they're really great artists out there.
Absolutely. We just about hit the hour mark. Do you want to stay on for a couple more questions? I got a couple more for you. Is that okay?
Oh, I'd be more than happy to. I appreciate the intelligent, all too often you have these dialogues and the questions are inane and all this other, but yeah, I'm more than happy. You guys are a pleasure to talk to.
Yeah, I've listened to tons of radio shows and stuff like that before I started my own, and I knew I could do it better than 90% of the guys out there. But I have another co-host on the line with me, and it's my man from Georgia. Toph is on the line, and Toph's got a question for you, Bruce. Toph, go right ahead.
Okay.
Hello, Mr. Harris. An honor to talk to you. How are you doing today?
Oh, not bad. Nice to talk to you.
Well, about a year ago, I was kind of late, and I discovered a website called dailymotion.com, and there's a lot of old stuff that you can post there, and it doesn't get taken down, and there's a lot of, like, Ring of Honor, NWA, AWA, a bunch of old stuff like that. But as I was searching, I actually found a lot of old stuff from the Canadian Stampede Federation, and it was pretty good, but there wasn't that much on there. But I enjoyed what I saw, and I know that a while back I had heard rumors going on that you were in the process of attempting to revive the promotion. How's that going, or are you allowed to talk about such features?
Yeah, we're actually making some progress up here. You know, it's actually going quite well, and as I mentioned before earlier on the show, I think one of the reasons why it's going well is I think people are wanting to go back to old school, and I'm not talking about wool trunks and cauliflowered ears and stuff, but kind of where wrestling is, for want of a better term, perceived to be quasi-legit, and most of the guys actually know how to interact and all like that. So it's been going quite well, and as I mentioned before, I'm hoping that we can kind of lend ourselves to the development of some of that. We've been talking to a lot of promoters in the States, in California and down east and all over the States, and I'd like to see kind of the grassroots reestablished, and Stampede being part of it, where there's, shows on a more regular basis and wrestling's the main course, not high spots and backyard frivolity and all that kind of stuff. So it's actually been going quite well, though, and I'm really hopeful that we can kind of be, you know, at the bottom of, you know, at the foundation of the rebirth of wrestling. And I think WWE, as I mentioned before, I think it would be to their advantage if the grassroots were re-sown, you know, seeds were sown at the at that level too. You know, it's all part of the whole process.
Yeah, it's definitely a cool thing. I hope it works out for you. I have another question. I've heard a lot of stories about the dungeon. I've heard a lot of stuff about when people went to the dungeon to get trained. Some would even say it was kind of a religious experience. Do you care to elaborate on that?
Yeah, it was. It was funny. In the latter years of my dad's life, I remember some of these tourists, like people would come in from Japan or Europe or the States, and they would show up at the house, and it was almost kind of funny. They very humbly asked my dad if he would stretch them down in the dungeon or, you know, apply some submission hold or something like that. It was like some kind of a pilgrimage to Mecca or something like that. But yeah, the dungeon was kind of, you know, I kind of grew up as a little kid watching some of that, and it was almost a bit scary at the time, because I used to see these guys come in there, and, you know, quite often big football player types and bodybuilders, and they figured that they were going to get into wrestling the easy way. And my dad, who... my dad would sort of disarm them with, you know, kind of take it easy on me. I'm, you know, kind of out of shape, or I'm, I just had a big meal, or I'm nursing a cold or something like that. And he would kind of, and they'd be all like, we don't want to waste our time on you, Stu. We want to fight Killer Kowalski or, you know, some big star. And anyway, within a matter of minutes, my dad would have these guys, on the mat screaming and pleading for their lives. And it was kind of, it was part of the dues paying process back then. And I guess, in most cases, instilled a lot of respect, not only for the business, but these guys had a lot more respect for themselves after they were sort of through that kind of baptismal.
That sounds really cool. I have one more question, if that's okay.
Yeah, as many as you want.
I'm a huge fan of Davey Boy Smith. I mean, Owen is great, too. I'm a huge fan of Owen. I've always felt that Owen was the better worker between him and Brett as well. I mean, I love the entire Hart family, but I love Davey Boy.
Yeah, not even to denigrate the other, you know, just athletically. And I thought, you know, he had a little more pizzazz to him. But, you know, Brett was, you know, an awesome worker, too.
Well, I was a huge fan of Davey Boy Smith, and I actually saw him a few times at some of the few house shows that WWF had in my area when I was a kid. Some of my earliest memories of WWF was his match with Brett at SummerSlam in 1992. What happened to him was very unfortunate, and the other day I was actually watching this documentary about him. I know it had something to do with he accidentally fell in a trap door at a WCW show. Do you know anything about that, or would that be too
I heard about that. You know, I believe it was, if I'm not mistaken, it was, I thought it was with Vader. You know, that's what I seem to have recalled. There was some kind of a gimmicked stipulation match at WCW.
What it was, Bruce, I remember pretty well. There was they did something with the Ultimate Warrior that night where he was going to come through the ring and somehow sneak up on Hulk Hogan. And they had a trap door that Davey Boy took a brutal bump on. Just like, you know, it looked like a normal, regular bump, but it was from a pretty high, I guess it was a backdrop or something, or suplex or something like that. And he bumped on this trap door, and you could just hear the thud if you watch it back. It was pretty bad.
I heard he damaged his disc, or he incurred some kind of, I'm not sure if he ruptured a disc or herniated one or whatever, but I heard that was kind of a starting point, and then I heard that kind of resulted in him having to take painkillers to deal with the chronic pain of that, and that, you know, sort of like the maybe a starting point for, you know, the downhill slide. You know, I don't know what other elements kind of entered into it later, but I definitely heard that story, and he told me that himself, incident with the trapdoor and the, I know he was quite disenchanted with, Eric Bischoff, who apparently orchestrated or was the guy who dreamed up that trapdoor charade, you know, and I remember him definitely attributing his back problems and some of his subsequent painkiller problems, you know, which ultimately were sort of complicit in his downfall.
Yeah, what happened to him was very unfortunate, but he was definitely one of my all-time favorites, and I definitely think he deserved to be a world champion. I know the UK representation in wrestling isn't as big as it used to be. I think that's why a lot of fans are big on Wade Barrett. I'm not sure if you're familiar with him, but he's also from the UK area, and he's also a big fan of the Bulldog. I just wanted to ask you those questions. Thank you for
I kind of cut my teeth in wrestling in England, and I ended up bringing both of those guys over, and quite a few others, actually. But I'm kind of a little bit saddened just with the demise of the business in England, too, because it used to be an awesome breeding ground for talent. You know, there was way more guys that were coming out of England that were world class that nobody's ever heard of. You know, these guys like Marty Jones and Mark Rocco and Steve Wright and little guys like Jimmy Breaks, who, you know, not to put Daniel Bryan down, is about the same size, but work circles around those guys, you know, and nobody's even heard of them. Johnny Saint and Roy St. Clair and guys like that, you know. If they were around today, they'd be right up there with the Daniel Bryans and CM Punks, and they're all around that size, you know. And it's kind of sad that it's kind of down to virtually nothing over there now. You know, I bet if you talk to a guy like William Regal, who was I think started by Marty Jones, you know, he'd probably be telling you the same. You know, there was like phenomenal workers over there. And nice thing about England, when I was over there, they only had like on any given card, 4 matches, 8 guys. And they had no smoke and mirrors or no extra additives. It was just working. And by that token, it used to be an incredible learning environment, you know, because you didn't have all the props and all that. You just had to sink or swim on your ability to get the crowd off their ass, you know. So,
yeah, thank you for answering my questions, Mr. Hart.
Oh, intelligent questions too. So I'm more than happy to offer your perspective.
Awesome. There's one last question I got for you, and this question is about WrestleMania 26, and we all know that, you know, it was Brett versus Mr. McMahon in this big match that was, I don't know, 10 years in the making, something along those lines. And
that was a frustrating gig for me, and I think I alluded to that, and I've alluded to it the odd time on, I think even in my book or whatever, but it was a little frustrating as they called us in the morning of the show in Phoenix, and Michael Hayes and Hunter and Vinny, and I think there was a couple of other sycophants around who were, but in any case, they ran this finish by us, and it was supposed to be were supposed to be initially being bribed by Vince, and then Brett was supposed to make out like he bribed us as well, and we're all that, you know, which to me was a bit concocted. But anyway, it ended up with me supposedly refereeing this. So he ran this finish by us where the Heart, you know, there was about 20 of us, the in-laws and the nephews and nieces and all this other, and beat the hell out of Vince every time he got thrown out. We put the boots to him, and I was the crooked referee or whatever as well, you know. And then finally Brett, after I think beating Vince with claw bars and chairs and whatever other props were there, made Vinny tap out. And anyway, I remember they asked me what do you think, you know, after they ran this big. I said, frankly, I think it stinks. You know, it doesn't make any sense whatsoever, you know. I said, you got a 60-plus-year-old non-wrestler here who, you know, is fighting supposedly the best there is, the best there was, and the best there ever will be. And you know, 15 or 20 of Brett's accomplices are also putting the boots to poor hapless Mr. McMahon, and we're the faces. I said it's almost like, you know, overkill to the max to me. But I told him, just based on my overview of the whole thing, you know, I said, given that this is Brett's first match back since his stroke and all this other, you know, it would seem to me that you have some room to get sympathy with Vinny, who's playing the arch villain to the max. And I said, just off the top of my head, you guys just had a charade a couple of weeks back where you had Brett, some kind of contrived thing where Brett was in the limousine or got, you know, run over or something like that. And so I said, and Brett's sort of already damaged as well from that, you know. I said, but beyond that, about a month before that at Royal Rumble, Hunter and Sean had some kind of a falling out where I think Hunter cost Sean a match or vice versa or some such thing. But so I said, there's a little bit of heat between those two guys as well. But I said, anyway, just throwing out a finish off the top of my head, if you had Vinny, you know, just get some major heat on Brett right from the get-go, you know, because Brett's supposedly injured from the car accident and maybe still recovering from the stroke and all this other. But just get major heat, and Brett's getting all the sympathy. And I said, finally, at some point, Brett, after the prolonged sell, turns the tables and gets the sharpshooter on Vinny in this penultimate, you know, kind of pop. And I said, it wouldn't be a bad finish if you had at that point Stephanie come running up to the ring to, you know, supposedly cheer for Daddy or whatever, take the ref, you know, preoccupy the ref. And then I said, Hunter could hit the ring and lower the boom on Brett and be about ready to give him the pedigree. I said, at which point, you know, it would be an awesome and totally out of the blue pop if who, of all people, but the Heartbreak Kid hits the ring, and as Hunter's about ready to put Brett down, and he's got his arms tied up and so he can't block or anything, and I said, Hunter, Sean gives Hunter the sweet chin music, and I said, at which point you have this, hell freezes over situation that we're, of all people, Brett and Sean tag teaming against Vince and Hunter. You know, I said, it would have, in my estimation, been a really mega pop for SummerSlam, you know. And I saw them all looking at each other and like, wow, this has got some you know, potential, and we completely out of the blue type thing. But much to my chagrin, the guy who kind of gave it the thumbs down was Brett. he claimed that because of his Lloyd's of London, something or other. And so it was kind of frustrating. A couple of months later, Brett came back and did a, you know, far more anticlimactic involvement with SummerSlam with Nexus that meant virtually nothing anyway, you know, and it's kind of, but yeah, just off the top of my head, I thought, you know, I still think that would have been a hot match, and it maybe would have reignited Brett. I'm sort of a little disappointed when Brett did come back after the big kind of, you know, rebirth at WrestleMania with Vince. I thought that might be kind of a good launching point for all kinds of stuff with Brett, and unfortunately it didn't seem to, you know, I'm not sure if that was by Brett's choice or whether it was due to physical limitations or what, but I thought that was kind of like it would have been a perfect way to reignite Brett's career.
Well, he did become the United States champion at one point, but you're absolutely right. It kind of was anticlimactic in that aspect. I remember just thinking, you know, what is going on here? There was really no indication that you guys would be, I'm talking about the Hart family, would be a part of this match whatsoever. And this angle kind of came out of the blue. But as the guest referee, you were out there in front of 75, 80,000 people, and you weren't really into it or anything. But from watching that match back, I just watched it the other night, You were a professional. You were seeming to get the job done, and you were doing everything to your best of ability. Was that a cool moment being a part of WrestleMania 26?
Oh yeah, it was kind of cool, you know. And I wasn't the least bit nervous at all. It was I think any decent worker will tell you that the crowd, you know, kind of pumps you up and kind of spurs you to new heights, you know, and if it doesn't, then you shouldn't be out there, you know. It was a lot of fun, you know, and it was kind of fun, and I'm sure Brett and Vinny were, it was almost a little bit kind of amusing in retrospect, because it looked to me like Brett was really laying, you know, the chair shots, especially, and some of that, you know, and I'm sure Vinny maybe got concussed a bit there, but it didn't look to me, you know, I've been around long enough to see when guys are pulling and pulling chair shots and stuff, but looked to me like there was a little bit of, you know, kind of payback or something. So it was a little bit, I was almost getting a little concerned because some of the shots were so hard. It's like, I hope Vinny makes it through this match, you know. And the funny thing was, Brett looked like he was, you know, I think it was his first match back, and since he'd had the stroke or whatever. And a couple of times he was laboring out there, and I was like a little concerned, like hopefully neither one of these guys throws a seven or something out here, you know. So it's kind of strange.
Well, that's a great insight into that match. And to tie this all together, Hart Brothers Wrestling, the training center is open and looking for different people. You're talking about anybody. You don't have to be jacked to the gills. You don't have to be, you know, muscles bulging out of your biceps. You can be a regular athletic individual, and the Hart Wrestling University can mold you into a superstar in the future. Give us some information.
Yeah, I think that's where it's at these days, you know, like not to digress or not to run on, but that's why Daniel Bryan and CM Punk and guys like that are, you know, they're the testimony to that. You know, you don't need to be built like Ultimate Warrior or Hulk Hogan. Actually, time has never been better for, you know, ordinary people, so to speak. You know, some guys that are maybe not that, you know, not 10 feet tall, or they don't weigh 400 pounds, or they're not juiced to the max, but just some guys who have some decent athletic ability and also maybe have a good grasp. They get it. They understand what working really is and how to, you know, insert themselves into the equation. You know, those are all really what working's all about, you know, and I'm really happy for the guys like Daniel Bryan, and them are almost kind of an embodiment of the old Stampede type guys that we used to be breaking in. Like, I remember back in the 80s, not to digress, but I remember WWE as the era of Hulk Hogan and Ultimate Warrior and Big John Studd and the Legion of Doom and all like that. And they're all kind of looking down their nose at all the guys in Calgary and referring to them as midgets and all like that. And that was guys like Owen and Pillman and Benoit and Jushin Liger, later Keiichi Yamada at that time, and even Dynamite, you know. And those guys were all, none of them weighed much more than 200 pounds, but they were almost had a chip on their shoulders of what they were going to show all the muscle heads and whatever, that working was where it's at, not just looking like something, you know. And I'm happy to see guys like Daniel Bryan and CM Punk, and some of them are almost kind of a reconstitution of that.
Absolutely. These are guys that I personally watched here in the East Coast for about 10 years, since about 2003, when not many people knew who they were. And I saw these guys and said, wow, there's the future right there. These guys are going to be something. And there was a lot of guys back then that could work who just haven't really done it. They haven't made that jump to the main event. But Daniel Bryan, CM Punk, those guys really have. And it's a testament to them.
I'm really hopeful that, you know, I can't profess to be totally up on all the dynamics of Ring of Honor and all that other stuff, but I'm really hopeful that those guys sustain what they were doing, you know, pushing wrestling. And not the biggest mistake I think any indie promoter could do today is trying to be like a flaccid copy of WWF or WWE or whatever, and trying to be a clone of that. I would just tell these guys to have the wrestlers go out and wrestle and try to captivate and entertain the crowd and be their own people. And I think that's the way to succeed, not trying to. Even worse is when these guys are flogging these worn out old retreads, you know, the Tatankas and the Brutus Beefcakes and the all that stuff, you know. It's like watching the Platters or something like that, you know. But anyway, I don't want to digress into a dissertation on the what's wrong with the business right now.
Well, we plan on having you back on the show in about a month, and we're going to talk to you a little bit more about this promotion we're running. Two free ride scholarships to the Hart Brothers Wrestling University, and we're going to be doing that right here through Pro Wrestling Powerhouse Radio and ProWrestlingPowerhouse.com. There will be a press release tonight, and should be on all the websites tomorrow morning. If prospective candidates want to join the school, how would they get in touch with you, Bruce?
They can get a hold of us on Facebook at Hart Brothers University. Facebook fan page.
Okay, you got it. And we'll make sure we plug the hell out of that and continue to plug it. But you know what? Thank you so much for being on the show tonight, Bruce. This has been
absolutely awesome. Appreciate it. I, as they say on Jim Rome, I appreciate the vine. So I, you know, anytime. And I'm hopeful that I can get back down there. I spent a fair bit of time in New York, in that area back in the 90s. That's an awesome wrestling environment down there. And I'd love to see it kind of reborn down there, you know, just at the grassroots level. You know, I'm not talking about Madison Square Garden and all of that, but I'd love to see just, you know, small promotions kind of reviving, coming back on, where fans could just go out, spend $10 and watch a show every week or two, and like Queens or Deer Park or places like that. You know, that's
absolutely
where it's at.
Yeah, we're actually doing a promotion with Pro Wrestling Syndicate, which is a company in New Jersey, up north in Rahway, New Jersey. We're going to be there this coming Friday night, And we're going to be filming, we're going to be doing some interviews with some wrestlers while running around with the camera, having a fun time filming the video blog. And we're going to do the same thing next month or in November, I believe, with, no, I think it's next month, October, with Family Wrestling Entertainment in Brooklyn, New York. So we're also trying to get that word out there about small local.
I'd love to get down there, and I've had a few people approaching me down there trying to get us to come down and do two or three-day seminars and stuff like that. So I'm hoping that might happen. If such is the case, I'd love to hook up with you guys in person.
Yeah, we'll get a couple beers or something. We'll have a good time.
Oh, yeah, I look forward to a Samuel Adams or a Rolling Rock or something like that, you know, that they don't sell up here. So.
Yeah. Sounds awesome, Bruce. Thanks again so much, and we'll be in touch, man. We'll let you know how this is going, how the submissions are going, and I'll forward you some of the candidates that we have.
I'll look forward to it, and thanks very much. You guys are doing a great job, and look forward to interacting with you guys.
Absolutely. We've got a lot more to talk about, so we'll get you in about a month back on the show. I have a whole list of questions here we didn't even get to. So once again, thank you very much. And everybody check out the Hart Brothers Wrestling University in Calgary, Alberta, Canada. Thanks so much, Bruce.
All the best, guys. Take care. Thank you. Bye.
Thank you very much. Ladies and gentlemen, Bruce Hart, what a fantastic interview. That was a lot of fun, I got to say. A personal markout moment in my life. And if you missed the big announcement earlier on in the show, ProWrestlingPowerhouse.com, right here on Pro Wrestling Powerhouse Radio, we are going to be issuing two full-ride scholarships to the Hart Brothers Wrestling University, where you will get to train one-on-one with Bruce Hart himself. This is going to be something that doesn't really happen very often in the wrestling business. Candidates out there, if you are interested, if you are currently an independent professional wrestler and want to get that certificate, that thumbs up from Bruce Hart, and you want to get in at that school, send in your resume to webmaster@prowrestlingpowerhouse.com. I want to see your athletic history. I want to see some references, some people I can call up, talk to about, you know, what you've been doing in the wrestling business. Maybe letter recommendations from your trainers. Maybe your job history. I want to know all this stuff, because we are going to do this the right way. We don't want to pick just somebody off the streets that doesn't have the passion to be a professional wrestler. We want to send one female, one male, two great candidates to the Hart Brothers Wrestling University. More details will be available tomorrow, and you can always contact me for personal details on Twitter at PW Powerhouse, on Facebook, facebook.com/ProWrestlingPowerhouse, or email me. Any questions whatsoever about the particulars in this sweepstakes, please email me, webmaster@ProWrestlingPowerhouse.com. Once again, I will be issuing a press release about this entire sweepstakes. You're going to find out everything you need to know. I'm hoping that Dave Meltzer gets this thing, as much as I really don't – I got kind of like a – I guess – I don't really want to talk trash about him, but I'm really not a big fan of the dirt sheets. But anyway – if he posts it, if all these guys post it, it'll get out there like wildfire. And if you're, like I said, if you're an NFL guy, if you're an NCAA guy, if you play college sports, you played high school sports, high school wrestler, if pro wrestling is your dream, you want to go get the best training possible. And Bruce Hart has been responsible for some of the biggest names in professional wrestling. We're talking guys like Brian Pillman, Dynamite Kid, Davey Boy Smith, Bret Hart, Owen Hart. Even guys today like Natty Neidhart. Well, she's not a guy, but you get my point. Natty Neidhart, Tyson Kidd, D.H. Smith, and so many others. So we will be talking about this throughout the next few weeks, and we will narrow it down. We're going to narrow this thing down. We're hoping to get a lot of submissions, and before you know it, we will choose a winner. Right now, we have not set a timetable for how long the sweepstakes will go for. We're hoping a month, maybe 2 months. Hell, maybe a few more months than that. We'll see how it goes, but this was absolutely awesome. So I'm going to bring in my co-host. And I didn't play his theme music earlier, so I'm going to play it right now, because Pro Wrestling Powerhouse Radio stays on the air for another 26 or so more minutes to talk about the current topics in professional wrestling, more or less, Night of Champions, Monday Night Raw, and Impact. So here he is, TLD.
It's TLD.
Yeah.
Four-time tag team champion. I'm curvy. I'm cute. I'm a champion.
Hey, TLD, man. What do you think of the interview tonight?
Oh, man, it's cool to talk to a Hart family member. It's pretty awesome that we got this great interview, a great contest, you know, for people who always want to know where to become a professional wrestler. And you, if you have that Hart name under your belt, well, you know, that's top of the line right there. That's a good start. So I think it's a great opportunity if anybody does have the chance, including myself, who could definitely submit and become trained by the Hart family. Who think about it, TLD, trained in the Hart family dungeon.
And that's precisely what it's going to be. It's going to be dungeon style training, not what you hear of, where Stu Hart is down there stretching guys and making them scream and all that kind of stuff. But it's going to be dungeon style. It's going to be how these guys were trained, and that's the best part about it, because not everybody anymore gets that kind of training. There are all different ways to train professional wrestlers. I'm not saying I know the first thing about it, because I don't. But we talked to a guy like Rhett Titus recently. Actually, let's go back a year. We talked to Rhett Titus. We asked him about training under Austin Aries, training under Bryan Danielson, and the differences between the two. Whereas Bryan Danielson was all about the conditioning, you know, had him do 500 squats, 500 sit-ups, whatever. Where Austin Aries was more about the psychology, the bumps, the holds. Still did conditioning, but it wasn't the focal point as much as Bryan's were. So there's many different ways to train in professional wrestling, and you can bet your ass that the Bruce Hart and the Hart Brothers University know what the hell they're doing. And let's now bring in Toph, who had some great questions. Here is Toph. Toph, man, welcome back to the show. You had some good questions, and you came into the interview a little bit late, but I know you're going to go back and listen to the rest of it. What did you think of the Bruce Hart interview tonight?
Oh, it was definitely cool. I like the Harts. They're definitely very vocal people, and they don't mind answering questions, and they're respectful towards the fans. So it was definitely great. Looking forward to seeing him again on the future show.
Yeah, absolutely. We're going to have him back in about a month, and we're going to need all the help in the world getting this contest, this sweepstakes, as I like to call it, out there, because we, Pro Wrestling Powerhouse Radio, Toph, will, you guys are going to be involved in this directly. I'm going to be in contact about these prospective candidates. We are going to send, literally, we are going to make dreams come true thanks to the Hart Brothers Wrestling University. Absolutely awesome. So it's going to be a fantastic, exciting few weeks here for Pro Wrestling Powerhouse Radio.
Jay, just pick me the winner. Just make me the winner. We don't need no contest. I win.
You do feel like going to Calgary for 3 months? I mean, how would Tara really feel about that?
I know the wifey here, you know, she might be a little against it, although she does have some great cooking. I don't know up there. I don't know what I have to deal with up there, but I've never been to Canada at least more than like 2 days. But, you know, I don't know. She's a very good cook, though.
Great, yeah, well, definitely. I've had some of her food before, and it's fantastic. But,
TLD,
man, you're on the line tonight for a reason, and that is you're going to update us on the Pro Wrestling Powerhouse All-Stars Fantasy League.
Yes. So, remember, the rules were for a pay-per-view that every match was double the points. And if they make the pay-per-view, you got 2 points in general. And then, of course, the main event got 5 points, but every point was doubled. So this is the up-to-date draft on this. Now we were asking over the weekend, Toph technically did win, therefore Daniel Bryan became the champion, but Daniel Bryan was stripped of the title, therefore we are not counting that because the rule was he had to lose a championship at any time. But I wanted to throw it to you, Jay, if that was technically a loss for Toph.
No, I don't consider being stripped a title loss, even though it'll go in the record books that he's no longer champion. I do not consider it a title loss because he did not lose a match. So, no, the championship win counts, but there's no title loss. There is now no WWE champion. When that next champion is crowned, however, they will reap the benefits of the points.
Right. So, What? So as of right now, still in the lead after Monday Night Raw is Jersey J. You got 41 points, but I'm not too far behind. Yep, 41 points. Remember, everything was doubled. You got 20 points from Night of Champions. However, myself, I got 22 points from Night of Champions. I'm now at 38. And Tope is at 28 points for the big championship win. He got some good big points for that. And, well, as for John, his champion lost on a pay-per-view. Therefore, he lost more points, and he's down now to 20. Yeah, just 20.
24, okay. Well, that is amazing. We've got a couple months to go. We've got some TNA shows to go, especially Bound for Glory, which is going to be huge in this contest. And we all have injuries. We all got injury bugs. I mean, if I'm not mistaken, Tope's got, you know, Christian's out on Tope's team. Cody Rhodes is out on my team, even though he's not injured, but we all know that why he's out. A couple other people as well. There's somebody out on your team, I believe. It's just there are injuries.
Mark Henry's out on my team.
There you go, yeah. Mark Henry. And John's got somebody out too, John Cena. John's got John Cena out. So across the board, it all seems to be pretty damn good. Do you have Mr. Anderson? Well, who's got Mr.
Anderson?
Does anybody have him? Yeah, see, that's
I do.
Trouble.
Yeah, I have Mr. Anderson.
He might not be in TNA much longer. And let's bridge the gap there. And I know Night of Champions is kind of a hotbed topic, but let's talk about a little TNA. And they had the No Surrender show last Thursday night. And I got to say, man, I did fall asleep during it. Not saying it was a bad show. I enjoyed it.
Okay.
Definitely enjoyed it. I did fall asleep, got a little bored because I
guess
watched.
Not.
Well, no, I watched. I was watching Austin Aries, AJ Styles again for the millionth time. But it was a good match. It was solid. I went back. I finished the whole show. Great wrestling on Impact. We saw the demise of Mr. Anderson until he works out a new contract with TNA. We won't see him back. So Bully Ray, still the champion. But the Bound for Glory series was won by AJ Styles, the phenomenal one. And he put up two great matches. I was really pulling for Magnus to win because I kind of wanted to see a change of the guard. But, Toph, you're our resident TNA, you know, diehard here. You know, we all like TNA, but you are a diehard TNA fan. What were your thoughts on No Surrender and the outcomes from that show?
I thought the show was fine. I thought that Magnus needed it more because we as fans talk about how TNA needs to push some new talent. You know, Magnus is one of the few genuine, you know, homegrown talents that's been there. I mean, he's come a long way. He was the Gladiator, part of the British Invasion. Very underrated tag team. Probably would have done more if they just weren't abruptly broken up, you know, when Hogan and Bischoff came in. But I understand why AJ won. I think that Aries could be the next top guy. I know that he's a former world champion. I know that he's a former X Division champion, but I believe he could be the next guy that TNA focuses on. Every single time, you know, TNA is in a big city, every single time Aries gets a push, he gets reactions very well, very positive. I was shocked last year at Bound for Glory when he fought Jeff Hardy. Going into the show, I thought that it was going to be one of those matches where it would be like, you know, maybe 70-80% of the crowd would be for Hardy and like maybe 20 would be for Aries. But if you remember that match, it was like 50-50 split. They were really into Aries. You know, every time they go into a smart town, they're into Aries. You know, he's basically like their CM Punk, really. He's a great talent. You know, he was going to retire, but TNA just offered him the contract deal and things worked out for him. But I understand why they're pushing AJ, you know. I thought it was a good show. It kind of reminded me of a King of the Ring pay-per-view. Not the pay-per-view where it's like the whole tournament in one night, but, you know, where you build up on the Raws and then you have, like, the semis and the finals and your world title match. I thought it was a good show all around. This is sort of, like, kind of minor, but I'm actually happy that Jeff Hardy will be working with Manic. Props to Hardy. I'll definitely admit when I'm wrong. I hated him. After that Victory Road thing, I just thought he was a loser, and I said so many bad things about him, but he's definitely changed my opinion of him. I'll admit I was wrong, and he's definitely changed his life. Props to him for – I'm not even going to say he's lowering himself to the X Division because his style fits the X Division anyway, and TJ Perkins is a phenomenal talent, and I think he'll have good chemistry with Jeff Hardy. So props to Hardy for, you know, working with the X Division dude. And I hope that this thing with Chavo Hernandez, I hope it leads to Chavo going heel. I mean, he's nowhere as good as a heel as Eddie or Vicky, but he's a Guerrero, you know, and he was a good heel when he had this Cruiserweight one on SmackDown. So, you know, overall, though, it was a really good show, easily one of their best impacts in a while. So, yeah.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, I'm always a stickler for TNA doing these super show type things with, and WWE for that matter. I didn't really enjoy what they did at Night of Champions with the Triple H promo in the beginning. But I'm always a stickler when they have these promos with Hogan coming out in the beginning with Bully Ray. And then in the middle of the show, you have Chavo and Hernandez with Lance Storm and James Storm and Gunner. And I feel like you could always take those two segments and maybe some of the backstage stuff they do and have one more, like, solid match or make another match that much better, more memorable. I understand why they do it, but that's just me being a stickler and a wrestling fan. But, yeah, overall, personally, I enjoyed those shows. I'm looking forward kind of to AJ Styles and his little shoot he's going to do on Dixie Carter with her in the ring, whatever it's going to happen this week at Impact. Should be cool, hopefully. But what I'm most concerned about is where they go after Bound for Glory. We know it's going to be AJ versus Bully, AJ probably reclaiming the TNA World Heavyweight Championship, but where do you go after that? That's where I hope TNA has a true plan. TLD, same question. What were your thoughts on No Surrender and the direction TNA is headed?
You know, I figured AJ Styles, I mean, we predicted this for a long time, that we knew this was probably going to be the course of AJ. You know, he took a year, he changed his gimmick around a little bit, which I liked the new change of him. You know, it was a fresh start for him. And I like this new rebellious AJ Styles. I think it fits better. And it's obviously how a lot of wrestling fans feel. They're putting a lot of realism into these stories, which I think is really great for him, and it works. I think it really truly does work. You know, I think it's a great idea. I think we need to see more of AJ Styles doing this, and obviously he prepared us for next week because he's obviously wants Dixie Carter in the ring. He wants to have a conversation with her in the ring, and I'd be curious to see what he's going to do or what he's going to say because obviously we already know about the whole contract problems that are going on right now with TNA. So I wonder where this will lead us to.
Yeah, me too. Exactly. There's it's kind of
is it easy to say that Bully Ray will just retain the title because it's possible. You know, the odds are slim, but
it is possible because if they're going to continue, if they have some kind of storyline in mind, there's always that possibility of a heel turn. Don't ever put it past Hulk Hogan to turning heel again and maybe costing AJ Styles the title. I'm just saying they
I have an idea on what they're. I think it's going to involve Chris Sabin.
That's a good point because what's his direction? He kind of blew up a couple weeks ago in Impact, and they kind of revealed his relationship with Velvet Sky and stuff backstage. And that show what is his future hold? You know, he's a guy who
I think
wants to see an champion. What's he going to do?
I think that he's going to turn into like a bitter Chris Jericho like. Late 97, early 98 character, like, you know, his last WCW days where he lost and he just kind of snapped. I think that he's going to be kind of bitter because, you know, AJ has the title and he was in the Bound for Glory series. I think we're going to get a slow heel turn. And the real question is, I'm trying to figure out what Velvet's going to do because Saban's great in the ring, but he looks like a dork, so people can't take him seriously. So they may have Velvet, like, cut promos for him. Or they could go the douchebag route and have him abuse Velvet, which would be kind of awkward because they're dating in real life, which could give him heat. I don't know. I mean, I just have a feeling they're going to turn Saban into, like, this bitter, you know, like, it's like when you're in school, you know that one guy, like, gets picked last when it comes time for, like, basketball and gym, and the guy's, like, bitter. I think they're going that direction with Saban. I'm not sure, though.
I don't know. It might be, actually. I think that's a good idea. I think his World Title run was bad, and he never got any like support behind the company again. Kind of like you know, he wasn't picked as like the Golden Boy. He kind of stumbled on the opportunity with the X Division title. So I could definitely see them him doing something like that, and I think that would fit, and especially with him and AJ Styles as a feud. You can't go wrong with those kind of wrestling matches. But I think if they had two different characters, now they have somewhat of a character behind them, I think it's going to work better than just simply being two X Division guys.
Yeah, and I know we're running low on time. I'll basically just close out with congrats to Magnus. They definitely made him look more like a star this year. I hope that they continue to push him and that to continue to make him a relevant star because, you know, TNA, they're actually very popular overseas, especially in the UK area. And, you know, at the beginning of the year, you know, they always go to the UK, and it would be great if, you know, they build up Magnus, you know, and by the time they go to UK next year, he could possibly be a world champion. If not, he might win the world title over there. I also know that for a long time, Bobby Roode, Sting, and Hogan have been pushing to have a pay-per-view in the UK, similar to, you know, what WWE did. But one of the few things, well, every now and then Dixie Carter says something smart, and she loves the UK fans. One of the reasons Dixie's against it is she doesn't know how they could pull off a pay-per-view without fans, you know, being spoiled with the internet and stuff, you know. So, you know, but hopefully they use Magnus right because, you know, he could definitely be a huge international draw for TNA.
Yeah, no question about it. And you talk about international draws and stuff like that, and it leads me to thinking about the future of professional wrestling. And if you look at a guy like Magnus, this guy is only 26 years old. And the future of wrestling, if you look at the WWE roster, and I'm going to use them because obviously the business kind of moves with them, they kind of have somebody from just about every region in the entire world. You know, you got a representative from everywhere. And that's something that's indicative to the way the wrestling business is going. So I think it would be smart to have a guy like Magnus, an international champion. And we discussed that with Bruce Hart earlier about guys from the UK. I mean, arguably, the best Ring of Honor champion of all time was Nigel McGuinness. Arguably, I'd say he's definitely top three. And his run was amazing. So if you gave it to Magnus, I think it could work. It's a very smart idea, Toph. I really like it a lot. Moving on a little bit to Night of Champions and Monday Night Raw last night. I thought personally they put on two very good shows, back-to-back nights, great wrestling on both, storyline development on both. No stories really ended. That's always a good thing, especially with John Cena not around and star power kind of down in WWE. You need to keep these stories moving and burning. There's nothing wrong with slow burning a storyline. That's what wrestling is all about. That's how you build heat. And we're seeing it firsthand with Daniel Bryan. But TLD, I'll kick it to you first, man. What were your overall thoughts on Night of Champions and Monday Night Raw? TLD, you with me, bro? TLD?
Yeah, man. I put myself on mute to make sure I don't have any background noise. Yeah, you know, I didn't think Night of Champions was anything great. Nothing. I mean, even though the championship turned, you know, the main championship turned. We all knew that was eventually going to be overturned somehow because of the way the fast count went. And I think there's going to be more to the story than what we saw last night, although I was very surprised that he won. So, I mean, but I think it's another great build for Daniel Bryan to, you know, hold the championship and just not be able to keep it. And I think it's a nice way, something different. Even though they're hot shotting the belt a little bit, you know, I think it hurt Randy Orton a little to lose the belt that quickly. You know, my concern from Night of Champions was that Randy Orton never put his shoulder up after the three count. Mike, if you really want to look at it like that, even though it was a fast count, if he would have done the regular count, Randy Orton probably still never would have got up based on the way he reacted. So what I would have thought would be better is that if the three count happened and then Randy put his shoulder up, then you would have like a legit – like saying that, oh yeah, well then, you know, Randy would have kicked out. So, well, that was my only about. I'm diving a little too deep into it, but you know, you get the idea of it though. That if Randy Orton was truly not going to win that match, if he was truly screwed, then honestly, if you look at it in that perspective, then Randy should have had a shoulder like up right after that happened.
Well, I think the whole point of it though is that Randy Orton was down for a 10 count, and Michael Cole alluded to that. And Daniel Bryan was even standing over him, you know, doing the yes, yes, yes thing at the end with the belt. And obviously this is – it's an inside job between Triple H and Scott Armstrong. That's what it is. They probably are going to do something along the lines of, you know, Triple H saying, hey, if Randy Orton gets in trouble out there, if he's knocked out, just do a fast count and get this over with because then I have something to fall back on. We do this. And Triple H telling Scott Armstrong – I'm going to take care of you. It's smart booking because Daniel Bryan now is the guy getting screwed month after month, week after week, and that is the whole point of it. It's not about Randy Orton getting screwed. Randy Orton isn't in on what's happening. He feels like Daniel Bryan actually screwed him. Triple H is doing this all behind everybody's back. And that is where he becomes the biggest heel that the wrestling business has, because he's doing this behind his freaking face of the company guy, Randy Orton's back. He's doing this behind Daniel Bryan's back, doing this behind the whole WWE Universe's back. The only people that are probably in it are Scott Armstrong, Triple H, and Stephanie. And that's where the genius of the storyline comes, because we know eventually it's going to come out. Maybe Randy Orton somehow finds out and is really pissed off. Who knows? Somehow, some way, it'll come out. But the best part about it is that we're building Daniel Bryan up for the much bigger win down the road.
Agreed.
Okay. Toph, man. Well, what about before I go to Toph? Will, what about your thoughts on Monday Night Raw and what they did last night?
I thought it was good. I liked the ending. The ending, that was very good. That, I have to say, I was very impressed with the ending of that, because, it was the first time that the babyfaces finally got over on everybody, pretty much. So I thought that went very well. I thought that was very strong. And, so I was very happy with that ending, actually.
Yeah, it was cool. It was finally...
And the people that were actually the ones that were in the ring with Daniel Bryan are those younger guys, which I think is the more important thing. And even Rob Van Dam, who's somewhat of a veteran, but, he's new back into the company. So a lot of the younger stars, not Big Show, not CM Punk, not a lot of the established guys, a lot of those mid-card guys, which I think is going to be what Daniel Bryan represents.
Yep, you're absolutely right. I think that it was a great turning point for the angle, because now you finally had a different ending to Raw. The marks can stop complaining that it ended the same way week after week after week. Finally have a different ending. The babyfaces come together, and now Triple H can come out and unleash hell on each and every single one of them. So the storyline just continues to bake, continues to boil. I'm digging it. Toph, what are your thoughts? Night of Champions, Monday Night Raw.
Raw was fine. Night of Champions wasn't that good. It felt like a Raw. It was just like a three-hour Raw. You start off with a long promo of Triple H. Granted, they had to give Curtis Axel a match because they were making him look weak, so they had to do something to rectify him, but still it felt very rawish. The Divas match felt flat. The finish was botchy. The commentators even mentioned it. The crowd wasn't into the United States title match at all. I don't know who Ziggler pissed off. Tag team match was okay. Tag team turmoil match was actually pretty good. I think the Punk Heyman match was the best match of the night, but it really fell flat with the Ryback reveal at the end. I think many fans were looking for like an NXT guy to debut. Some thought that may have Big E Langston or someone currently in the roster do something, but they had Ryback, and Ryback, they've just, fans have given up on him. They can do whatever they want on Ryback. It's like when they tried to get Rhino over back in the day and it just wasn't working. Fans just aren't feeling Ryback, and they just left a bad taste in the mouth. World Heavyweight Championship match wasn't that good. They didn't gel well that well. RVD got the big home pop, and he didn't win. The main event match with Orton Bryan was okay, and it had the fast count, and we all knew the screw job was coming the next night anyway. Overall, I just thought it was a very forgettable, passable show, but I thought Raw was fine.
All right. Well, great insight for TNA and WWE. Thanks so much, TLD and Toph, for being on again with me this week. We'll be here once again next week on the show. We'll have two interviews with independent wrestlers who right now their name kind of escapes me, but we'll have two interviews, and that sucks on my part. But Pro Wrestling Powerhouse Radio, we had a great show tonight. Bruce Hart, we are giving away two full scholarships to the Hart Brothers Training Facility in Calgary, Alberta, Canada. More information to come on that. So for TLD and Toph and Bruce Hart, thank you so much for joining us tonight on Pro Wrestling Powerhouse Radio. This is Jersey Strong Jay, and please keep it real and pray for Seaside Heights.